EINU is produced by PLS, a leadership and development organization in Central New York, offering an array of services to affect both individual and organizational transformation. This 12-part series will explain why emotional intelligence is important from a leadership and organizational developmental perspective.
We have a senior-level leader that we've coached over the years. He said, if you connect at the heart level, you will get people's hands and heads.
We all have the capability of being emotionally intelligent. It's how we tap into it. It's how we use it and how we're open about that.
What is emotional intelligence, or EI as it is often called, and how can it help a business improve its performance? What are the elements? How can it be strengthened? Welcome to EI and You. I'm your host, Mark Manchicaro, and over the course of this series, we will discover the answers to those questions and much more. Joining me today are Ralph Simone and Cindy Massengill, experts in the field of emotional intelligence. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you, Mark. Experts, I think, is generous, but I think we study the application of EI in the workplace. So I guess that I'll take expert and try and wear it appropriately.
Cindy, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mark. We're happy to be here.
So I guess the first question we need to ask folks, Cindy, is what is emotional intelligence and why, as a business owner or a senior leader, should you be concerned about it?
When we talk about what is emotional intelligence, you can almost imagine two different axes when you're thinking about emotional intelligence. So you're thinking about your emotions from your self perspective, and then how the emotions in others, and then the management and the awareness. So when you put all four of those together, it's the awareness of your own self-emotions and then recognizing the emotions in other people, and then also the management of your own emotions, and then the management of the emotions as it impacts other people as well. And it's really just as simple as netting it out to those four, if you can picture it, like two lines intersecting in the middle with four different boxes, two on the top and two on the bottom.
Sure, kind of like the grids we used to see in high school math, right? Those little quadrants. Okay, good. Ralph, emotional intelligence, is it something that can be strengthened?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the misconceptions. I think people think that it's you're born with it or without it, and we know it can be developed. And it's really about, to add what Cindy said, about making the connection. When you can connect with people, when they resonate with you, they'll follow you anywhere. And in an organization, it's about putting individuals and teams together to accomplish a common objective. And so making those connections at the emotional, at the heart level. We have a senior-level leader that we've coached over the years. He said, if you connect at the heart level, you will get people's hands and heads. Really powerful.
Very powerful. So it's something that we do as individuals, but it's also something that an organization works on together. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's some research from Daniel Goleman that would say that the collective IQ of an organization is directly correlated to the EQ, the emotional intelligence. And so we sub-optimize our IQ if we don't have people with high emotional intelligence, really reading the emotions and connecting with others at that level.
And just to add on to that too, there with Daniel Goleman's work, there's a direct correlation between high IQ and performance, higher performance. So the higher IQ of an organization, the higher the performance as well.
And what organization doesn't want to improve their performance?
Absolutely.
So how does the EI model drive the performance in organizations?
I think it's the awareness, but then the application. So it starts with awareness, but we want to attune people to the importance of recognizing, as Cindy pointed out earlier, their emotions and how they affect their thinking and actions, and then the emotions of others. So that the way that it drives performance, if somebody is really excited about it, they're probably going to be more anxious and ready to get into action. But if somebody is feeling not so good, their performance is probably going to be suboptimized. So if you can understand what feelings or emotions are getting in the way of their action, you can actually drive them to working through that.
And to add to that, if you're only relying on IQ to drive performance of an organization, you're missing a whole other aspect of how you can raise the performance of an organization by tapping into what we refer to as EQ or emotional intelligence.
Now, what are some of the ways that we're going to be able to tell how people need help with their EQ? How, you know, the employees and the other members in the organization, whether it's volunteer or an employment situation, how are we going to? What are some of the signs that maybe someone's struggling and they need to, really focus on some of these concepts that we're going to talk about?
So one of the prime indicators is what the relationships are like between supervisor and their direct reports, what the relationship is like between peer groups, what the relationship is like between departments, what the relationship is like between the executive team and their high potentials. What does that relationship look like? Is there a really great example of coach and mentoring between the executive team and their potentials rising up behind them? Is there openness for individuals to be open to other people's perspectives and opinions when approaching a task a certain way? This is a great one. People get nervous about this, but one of the key competencies of emotional intelligence is inspirational leadership. So are people open and actually vulnerable with being inspirational for their people as a way to drive performance, to create high-performing teams, in establishing trust? Are they willing to be inspirational to help their people get through, especially when there's tough times?
Very good. And Ralph, is that something that you've seen, throughout your coaching experiences, that, that the strongest leaders are really the ones that inspire the greatness, that pull out the strengths of their individual employees?
No question. They've moved past the individual achiever or expert level, and they see that the only way that they're going to bring their organization to the next level is working through other people. The other place that you see the lack of emotional intelligence is artificial harmony. You'll either see a lot of conflict, destructive conflict that can't be worked through, or you'll see artificial harmony, people not bringing things up. And that causes an organization to really struggle. And so it's really important to get people to lean in. A lot of men, and I'll get a little bit gender biased here, a lot of men are told, leave your feelings at home, men and women. They don't belong in the workplace. That's ridiculous. We're a whole person. We want people who are passionate about the work they do. We want them to be on purpose, and we want them to be inspired to do great work.
So when you say artificial harmony, I'm thinking groupthink, where everybody just thinks things are going along fine, that, or they just are faking it that things are going fine.
I think groupthink is a good example of it, or I'm not willing to bring something up because I'm not sure how the boss will react. I remember working for a guy 30 years ago, and he said, if you and I always see things the same way, we don't need one of us. I think he was referring to me. So I kind of got it. But this idea is that true synergy comes from respecting and valuing the differences and being able as a leader to read when people aren't on board. That's the social awareness piece of emotional intelligence. And being able to probe and say, it looks like you're not on board. What am I missing? What barrier do we need to remove? How can we get you aligned with where we're going?
And the removing the barriers, I think, as Cindy brought up a few minutes ago about the leaders, opening themselves up and being more vulnerable. Is that something that you find that, that the employees and the direct reports, that they pick up on that and then they are therefore more likely to open up themselves?
Absolutely. So I want to go back to that word vulnerable, because I think sometimes that can scare people. But what I mean by that is, imagine a company going through a downsizing, and a leader standing in front of 100 of their employees and saying, it's going to be okay, we're letting 30 people go, but, you know, painting this rosy picture, when in fact, in the minds of all those people, they're concerned about their jobs. They're concerned about the jobs of the people that they're working next
right.
to.
Am I next? 30 yes. people today. Am I next 30?
Yes.
Right.
And so that senior leader delivering that message would be in a much better place if they would come out and say, this is scary, and I'm relating to what you all must be thinking. That's the vulnerability that I'm talking about. Not pretending like it's all going to be okay, but really being willing to be vulnerable and say, I'm concerned for us too, but I'm in this for the long haul, and I'm going to do the best I can to have the best outcome for all of us.
We have a saying with some of the people we coach and train, lean into the feeling. So the emotion, whether it's a positive or less than positive emotion, lean into it. The only way that you'll come out the other side better is if you embrace what's right in front of you and to acknowledge that. You know, I have a story that links leaning into the feeling with leading at an inspirational level, and it involves my son. My son, who is 16 years old, runs cross country, third out of six seasons where he has another stress fracture, completely devastated, will not finish the season, will not be able to run in the sectionals. We're driving home in the car, and I can tell he's disappointed. And I said, let it out. Cry. I encouraged him to lean into the feeling, to process the disappointment that he was feeling viscerally. And he did. And we sat in the car in the garage, actually, for about 10 minutes. 2 days later, he wrote handwritten 22 letters to his teammates that were going to an invitational that he was not able to go to. Some of them were a couple sentences. Some of them were a page long.
So he wrote individual letters to each member of his team,
encouraging them to perform. And this was a meet that he had looked forward to all year. He's not able to go because he's injured. He actually writes another letter that he gives to the captain to read. And in each of these individual letters, he gave a single dollar bill. or I gave a single dollar bill, I think. And it said that, you know, individually you can't do much with $1, but if you pool them together, you can do great things. Remember to run together as a team. That was leaning into the feeling first, processing it, and then that led to inspirational leadership. They ran their best race of the year at the sports banquet. The coach couldn't say enough about the leadership. But that's the emotional intelligence model in action. It wasn't about pretending that he wasn't disappointed, terribly disappointed not to go, but it was leaning through and processing that feeling to come out the other side.
You know, one of the things that I tell my students when we talk about leadership is that, you know, there's a misconception out there for people that are not really paying attention, and that leadership and management are one and the same, and that really you can demonstrate leadership from any level of an organization. And the story that you just gave with your son, that's demonstrating leadership, mm-hmm. and, you know, somewhat empowering. But you have to let yourself, you know, show some vulnerability and open yourself up like that in order for that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, everybody leads, regardless of your title or where you sit in the family or the business or the school, right? The only question is, how well are you leading? But everybody's a leader.
So, Cindy, let's talk a little bit more about the elements of the EI model. Earlier, you mentioned the four quadrants.
Yes, yes. So the EI model consists of four clusters with 12 competencies. The clusters are self-awareness and self-management. So that in those two clusters, we're focusing on the awareness of our own emotions and then the management of our own emotions. And then the third and fourth cluster are social awareness and relationship management. And those focus on our awareness of our emotions with others and then the management of those emotions with others. So let me get into the actual competencies that fall within those four clusters. In self-awareness, there's one competency, which is emotional self-awareness. In self-management, there are four competencies, which include achievement orientation, adaptability, emotional self-control, and positive outlook. The third cluster, going over to the right, is social awareness, and there are two competencies there, empathy and organizational awareness. And then the last cluster, which is relationship management, there are five competencies: conflict management, coach and mentoring, influence, inspirational leadership, and last is teamwork. And those are the 12 competencies that incorporate emotional intelligence.
Sounds like there's quite a lot to this emotional intelligence thing. And as we go through this series, we're of course going to get in depth on each one of them, but we just kind of want to give our listeners a little bit of a preview of what it's going to be about. We certainly don't expect anyone to answer a quiz on what you just said right now, but we just want to see that there's so many different ways that this can be used to help an organization.
In fact, Mark, that's a good point, because when we go through a two-day workshop on this content, people will actually get an assessment on how they scored in each of those 12 competencies that Cindy just mentioned. We have them focus on two to strengthen over a period of 6 months, because you can't focus on all of them.
Sure.
Yeah, very important.
So, I mean, go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I was just going to add two. It's also important to realize that they don't work individually. So, for example, you might cluster inspirational leadership with coach and mentoring, or you might put together emotional self-awareness and emotional self-control. You can see that that you can group two or more competencies together to really affect a bigger change when you're working on them hand in hand.
And I'm going to assume that that some people, different personality types, are going to lean towards, one or two of these different competencies. It's going to really work for them as opposed to other people, or am I missing that?
Well, really, it's more, we try to focus on what are their current challenges today. What's in the forefront of their mind as far as what are the initiatives, the problems, the challenges that they're facing today? And then let's look at the 12 competencies and figure out which ones would help support those initiatives, challenges, problems that they're working on to help them through those.
So it's kind of like a toolbox that you can kind of pull out whatever tool you need for the current situation.
Yes.
So it's interesting, though, what you said about personality types. Personality types fit into the clusters. So my awareness of my personality type or preference is a piece of self-awareness, as is if I'm interacting with people, being aware of their preferences is a piece of social awareness. So it does fit into the model. And to the extent that I'm aware of my preferences or their preferences, I can adapt in order to make stronger connection. I also do think that if you're strong left brain, you might resonate with certain of the 12 competencies more than if you're strong right brain. And so there is a natural gravitation to some of these things. And we try and get past that, right? Because they're all important, and they're all important to understand how you can use those to strengthen your effectiveness as a leader.
So there's going to be skeptics in any kind of coaching, any kind of leadership, development type stuff. So what are some of the misconceptions that people have about emotional intelligence?
So I would say one of my favorites is, I'm an engineer, therefore I'm not empathetic.
It's all black and white, right?
I'm an attorney, and so therefore I can't be empathetic. Or I'm a technical expert, so therefore I can't be empathetic, which is completely false. I have a really close friend who has a PhD in biology. She's a scientist. And there's a misconception about people in that category that they're not empathetic. They're too strong. People are too strong left brain to be empathetic. And that's completely untrue. We all have the capability of being emotionally intelligent. It's how we tap into it. It's how we use it, and how we're open about that. we did a project with one of the local universities here, and we got into this great conversation about Steve Jobs. So we were talking about there's a direct correlation between strong emotional intelligence and performance. And so someone said, well, Steve Jobs wasn't that emotionally intelligent, and yet look at his performance. So I would argue that Steve Jobs was emotionally intelligent. He was strong in different areas. When he may not have seemed as empathetic openly in the public, I didn't know him personally, but he was highly inspirational. So he did really well with inspirational leadership through the products, through innovation, through supporting people and helping them to really innovate these fantastic products that no one was coming out with. And so while openly to the public he may not have seemed empathetic, he was really strong in other areas.
Well, you know, it leads to another, I think, misconception, and that is that emotional intelligence is about being nice. In fact, sometimes you need to be blunt. You need to give people the feedback they need to hear. Cindy talked about adaptability. Adaptability is a key self-management competency. And if you are recognizing some people need a boot in the back end, other people need to be pulled out and encouraged. And that's a key piece. One size doesn't fit all. And I think it gets pretty dangerous when people start to look at somebody from a distance and be able to decide that they're not emotionally intelligent without really looking at the full body of work.
And I think that might be part of the reason why some people would tend to dismiss EI as, you know, soft stuff, and it doesn't really work. You know, in the real world, that doesn't work. This all sounds wonderful and nice, but it doesn't really work. I mean, you know, the Steve Jobs thing, like you say, I didn't know him personally either, but he clearly was successful, and he didn't have the reputation of being the easiest guy to work for, right?
Right, that's true. Well, we'll get sometimes from technical companies. I've had this question. Somebody said, now, are you telling me that you'd rather have somebody that's high in emotional intelligence than a 4.0 from MIT? And I say, no, I'd rather have both. And why are we thinking that's mutually exclusive? I want somebody that has the intellectual fortitude, but also the emotional intelligence to lead people. You know, we have an integrated intelligence model that looks at the emotional side, the mental side, the physical side, and the spiritual side. In an integrated way. You know, as Gandhi said, we're one indivisible whole. So we want the IQ and the EQ, as well as the spiritual and the physical piece. Why not? Those are leaders that can take organizations to the next level.
Good. So emotional intelligence is not something that is exclusive of any other leadership trait.
No. As a matter of fact, the more integrated it is, the more impactful it will be.
You know, Mark, there's a quote by Warren Bennis, who was considered a pioneer in leadership and organizational development. And he talks about when he's referring to emotional intelligence, about how IQ is absolutely needed. It gets you in the door. But once you get into the door, EQ is what raises you to be a star. And so using both of those together is really, as Ralph said, we're talking about the whole person, the whole person's as a leader.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. And as we move forward, we're going to get a little bit deeper into a lot of all these concepts, of course. But, you know, maybe next time we'll get a little bit deeper into one or two of them. But have you guys got any closing thoughts as we leave our listeners here?
I do. You know, without knowing any more about this model, if you wanted to be more emotionally intelligent, slow down to go faster and be present.
EI and You is produced by PLS. Executive producer, Ralph Simone. Research director, Cindy Massengill. Technical assistance provided by Matt Langley. I'm Mark Mangiacaro. Thanks for joining us. For more information on emotional intelligence and other leadership development tools, visit discoverpls.com.